Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
The USS Gerald R. Ford, commissioned in 2017, is the pinnacle of the seaborne might of the United States military. As Matthew Mulherin, former president of Newport News Shipbuilding, declared that year,
"I can confidently say that this aircraft carrier represents the very best of American manufacturing, innovation, and experience."
Admiral John Richardson, then Chief of Naval Operations, listed the $13.3 billion nuclear-powered carrier's unique strengths. It's capable of transporting 75 aircraft, 4,500 sailors almost anywhere in the world, Sea Sparrow missiles that defend against anti-ship weaponry, M250 caliber machine guns, and many more weapon systems.
"Those in the world who wish to terrorize us here in the United States and abroad, those who wish to challenge our shores, planning for attacks, those who may challenge our prosperity and our trade, those who challenge our values, this is not a day of celebration. For them, this is their worst nightmare."
But anything this new and technologically complex has some problems too. And one of the Ford's problems comes from a place you probably didn't expect. It's toilets.
The system itself is called a suction-based system. So like when you're on an airplane, you know what, you go use the restroom in an airplane. And so it's not that the system hadn't been used before, but do you know any airplane that carries 5,000 people?
Shelby Oakley is Director of Contracting and National Security Acquisitions at the U.S. Government Accountability Office. In 2020, Oakley and the team at the GAO found that the same ship that can wreak havoc on enemies thousands of miles away had a very serious problem with more domestic concerns. Whenever the toilets on the Ford clog up, the only thing that can clear them is a specialized acid flush. And
that acid flush costs, you know, about $400,000.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And yes, you heard that correctly. A $400,000 spend every time a toilet on the USS Gerald R. Ford gets backed up. And by the way, the 2020 GAO report also found an acid flush is necessary on a regular basis. Well, Representative Mark Pocan, Democrat of Wisconsin, says that's just one example of how overblown the Pentagon's budget has become.
"We literally have to flush $400,000 worth of chemicals down the toilet system on one of these aircraft carriers in order to unclog them. I mean, that's truly the definition of flushing money down the drain."
Here's the thing. Right now, Congress is debating the Biden administration's $3.5 trillion anti-poverty, healthcare, and climate plan. Democratic Senator Joe Manchin invokes a military metaphor when talking about his resistance to the plan. He wants a, quote, strategic pause.
"We don't have—"
"Are you a hard no?"
"On the 3.5?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay."
Biden has also proposed a $715 billion 2022 budget for the Department of Defense. But no strategic pause there. A bipartisan effort in the House, in fact, may increase that number to $738.9 billion. Now, I want to take my own strategic pause here for just a second, because part of the problem is how we in the media just throw these numbers around. Willy-nilly, apples and oranges. We kind of treat them irresponsibly all the time. So let's find a common frame of reference for this analysis. That $3.5 trillion social spending bill is, in fact, $3.5 trillion over 10 years, meaning it's about $350 billion per year, and that's even before savings are factored in. The potential $738 billion DOD budget is for 1 year alone, meaning over 10 years, Congress basically has no problem whatsoever spending what could be more than $7.3 $3 trillion on defense, more than double the social spending plan. And exactly what that $7.3 trillion will be spent on over the next 10 years? Well, retired Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson says taxpayers, members of Congress, even top-level military brass do not have a complete picture of where those dollars are pulsing through that military-industrial complex.
One chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff recently said to Colin Powell, what would you do, Colin, if you were chairman again? And Powell didn't even hesitate. He said, I would get rid of half of the contractors and then look at the other half for elimination of as many of them as I could. Well, 6 months later, the new chairman called him back and said, Colin, I don't even have a list of them.
Well, given the lack of transparency, the paucity of formal audits, and rapidly changing modern challenges, here's the question. Is the Pentagon's budget too big? What should it be to fully fund a modern military, to protect the national defense, and strengthen domestic programs at home? That's what we want to learn today. And joining us first is Lindsay Kosgerian. She is program director of the National Priorities Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. Lindsay, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Meghna.
Is the DOD's budget too big?
Well, Meghna, yes. I would say it's far too big. You gave a lot of introduction to the issue of the budget, and I think one of the best comparison points we have at this time is the fact that, as you pointed out in your introduction, the Pentagon budget currently, at its current size, over the next 10 years, it would be twice the amount, more than twice the amount of the Biden Build Back Better plan, which is priced at $3.5 trillion over 10 years, and which is a matter of tremendous disagreement in Congress. And you have Senator Joe Manchin saying it costs too much, and it's very questionable whether it'll get through. But this $750 billion in 1 year military budget, on the other hand, is going to have no problem most likely getting through Congress this year.
Well, and in fact, that increase, by the way, it's an increase in what was requested by the Biden administration, is for, we'll get into this later, but some like systems that the Pentagon didn't even ask for itself. But you know, the $400,000 acid flush on the USS Gerald R. Ford is kind of an easy example to pick on. But it's not enough to really justify the strong point of view that both I'm taking and you're taking about the fact that the DOD's budget needs to be reduced. But so give me some other examples of why you think the Pentagon's budget is too big.
That's right, Magda. It takes a lot of $400,000 flushes to add up to hundreds of billions of dollars. So clearly there's money going to a lot of different places. I will add, it's an interesting coincidence that another number that is $400,000 for the Pentagon is that's approximately the cost of one helmet for an F-35 jet fighter. Just the helmet, just the thing the pilot wears on their head.
And the F-35 is also notoriously expensive and has had problems over the lifespan of that Joint Strike Fighter project, right?
Absolutely. This is a jet that has gone tremendously over budget, costs billions of dollars every year, and Congress has continually bought more of them than the Pentagon has asked for. And it's a jet that one time, speaking of sort of crazy things that the Pentagon is spending money on, this is a jet that one time spontaneously caught fire on the runway because of an engine problem that was an ongoing problem. So it's a terrible, terrible waste of money. But the bigger things that we're spending on, and the reason that we can get to a $750 billion and higher budget with the House and Senate Armed Services Committees now looking to push even past that, the reason that we can get so high, there are three main reasons, I would say. One is the fact that we've been at war for 20 years, and we've been investing not only in those wars, but in maintaining all of the other things that the military does at the same time. When we went to war in Iraq and Afghanistan, we didn't give anything up. We kept other things going. So the wars are one reason. The second reason is the contractors. And you got this in your opening as well, too. And every single year, about half of the entire Pentagon budget goes to for-profit contractors, only about 20% or 25% goes to pay for our troops. So you have about twice as much money going to contractors as you have going to the troops, and it adds up. It's a tremendous expense, and it's everything from weapons systems to, you know, maintaining those weapons systems, which are expensive and require lots of service, especially when you have things like toilets that get clogged and engines that catch fire on the runway. And then the third part is just everything that the Pentagon is doing all around the world all the time. And, you know, our military really does have a sort of do everything, be everywhere, all the time approach to the world. And that's far more than is needed for our security and safety. And it adds up to billions and billions of dollars every year. We have 800 military installations around the world, all over the world. And no other country has more than 20. So we're doing a lot with our military, and there's a lot of that that we don't need to be doing for our security.
So how much bigger then is the DoD's budget now than it was? I feel like 9/11 in 2001 was a big inflection point because of those wars that you were talking about. So how much bigger is the Pentagon's budget now than it was before 2001?
The Pentagon budget today is almost twice as high as it was in the late 90s. So it's a huge difference. You could cut about $350 billion and get back to where we were previous to 9/11. But it's also huge if you look even back further than that. The Pentagon budget today is bigger than it was at the height of the Cold War under the Reagan administration, which was famous for its military buildup. It's higher than it was at the height of the Vietnam War, which was, you know, a war where tens of thousands of American troops died and was a, you know, much bigger military involvement than anything we have going on today. So it's historically much larger than it's been, and there are reasons for that.
Well, we're going to talk about what those reasons are and also why it's actually so hard to understand where that $700+ billion every year is going. So Lindsay Koshkarian, stand by for just a second. We're talking about today whether the Pentagon's budget is too big, and not just philosophically, but is it really funding the kind of national defense we need for the 21st century? We'll have more when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we are talking about the budget for the Department of Defense of the United States. And we're doing that because, as you well know, there is a pretty vigorous debate going on in Congress about President Biden's proposal to spend $3.5 trillion over the next 10 years on social programs in the United States, whereas there's basically no debate going on about how much to give the Department of Defense. In fact, the Biden administration proposed a $715 billion budget for 2022. There's a bipartisan effort to increase that, to give the DoD, in fact, more than it's asking for, some $25 billion more that could increase its 2022 budget to $739 billion, which equates to $7.39 trillion over the next 10 years. Now, again, I said there's bipartisan support for that. So here's Congressman Adam Smith, Democrat and chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. He said at the committee's budget markup this month on September 1st that he's really happy with this DoD budget.
I think we have an excellent bill, and this is a very challenging time in national security. Certainly, all across the globe, we not only have a reasonably high level of threats, but they are changing and evolving on a day-in and day-out basis. And our committee's job is to put the Department of Defense and the men and women who work there and the men and women who serve in the best possible position to meet those threats and carry out our national security strategy. That's what we're doing here.
Congressman Adam Smith, Democrat and chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, speaking this month. Now, a little earlier, you heard from Representative Mark Pocan of Wisconsin, a Democrat who's one of a small but perhaps growing numbers of members of Congress, who says the national budget is just too high. And here's more of our conversation with him.
We don't need that much to secure this nation. That many more nuclear weapons doesn't provide additional security. That many more private contractors, that many more weapons. We don't even have a real audit of the Defense Department and how they spend their money. And if you look at just the F-35 as one example, there's over 800 deficiencies marked by defense on the F-35. And in the last year, in the last calendar year, they addressed two of those deficiencies. But we keep pouring money into that system. And, you know, this is the problem, is they have no accountability, they have no audits, and they're spending money in ways that I don't think actually lead to our security. We don't need 11 times more, the next 11 nations. What we need to do is have the right amount of dollars invested in things like the traditional definition of defense. But then let's, look at other things that really would provide a better posture for this country. And let's put more efforts into diplomacy. At the end of the day, I think, America does its best when we do our diplomatic efforts. We're coming out of 20 years later in Afghanistan. I think it's hard to call that a success. But I think certainly we do have successes when you share things like vaccines with the rest of the planet.
So, Representative, this is absolutely fascinating. I think what you said about audits might be news to a lot of Americans. So what do you mean by there's no audits of the Pentagon?
Yeah. So, everything in government, and I've been in local, state and federal government, we audit, look at very carefully to make sure that taxpayer dollars are spent effectively. We don't do this with the Pentagon. In fact, Barbara Lee for years has tried to get a real audit. And all we ever get are excuses from, quite honestly, the Department of Defense, why they can't do it. Well, that's absolutely BS. I mean, you can, like any other area, you can have accounting for what happens, but they don't. So billions and billions of dollars get spent on things, and yet we don't have that ability. Also, there are all kinds of cost overruns with defense contractors. There are actual violations we've seen by defense contractors that we continue to give money to. There really is a modernization that has to happen when we deal with defense.
I have to ask, though, I mean, the Department of Defense is what, half of the federal discretionary spending every year?
Yes.
So how is Congress accepting the fact that the DOD is like, we can't do an audit of this? I mean, how is that acceptable to members of Congress who are authorizing the spending every year?
Well, here's the sweet deal they have. Every single district in the country has a footprint, jobs in their district that do work that somehow the Pentagon is funding, including my own. And often it's many jobs, and that has a lot of say to average elected officials. There's just to give you an idea how obscene this is, there's a company in my district, and I'm not going to say the name of the company, but they make a small part that's about as big as my pinky that goes on submarines. And every year, not every year, but many years, they come by and want us to purchase more submarines than the Pentagon's asked for because they make that little part. So this is conversations that every member of Congress has on a regular basis. And because of that footprint of jobs in their districts, it's often hard to do things like reducing Pentagon spending or even having a common sense approach to Pentagon spending.
Representative Mark Pocan of Wisconsin. We'll hear a little bit more from him later. I'm also joined today by Lindsay Koshgarian, Program Director of the National Priorities Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. And now let me bring in retired Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who's a senior fellow at the Eisenhower Media Network, served in the U.S. military for more than 30 years, working his way up through the ranks, including as a special assistant or deputy chief of staff to General Colin Powell and Secretary of State Colin Powell as well. Colonel Wilkerson, welcome back to On Point.
Good to be with you, Magna.
Colonel, I have to say, you are the gift that keeps on giving, because we played a little clip from you a little earlier in the show about Colin Powell hearing from a former or recently from a chairman of the Joint Chiefs who could not even state that there was a list anywhere of the contractors with the DOD. Can you please tell me more about this story?
listening to Congressman Pocan really warmed the cockles of my heart because, well, I know his bent with regard to the defense budget, and I applaud it, but he's so rare. He is so rare in the Congress of the United States. But he's right about what you just expressed in terms of my example. There is no accountability. How can there be accountability when you don't even know with whom you're contracted? Oh, yeah, you know the prime, Lockheed Martin, but you don't know any of the dozens, perhaps even tens of dozens of subs that Lockheed has let the contract out to, which often include, as perfidiously as possible, some of the other big five like Raytheon, Grumman, and so forth. So this is a nefarious business. The GAO is releasing a report today, if it comes out as predicted, and it's a report exclusively looking, well, not exclusively, but mostly looking at fraud in contracting. They look at a fiscal year 2020, $422 billion going to contractors. Yes, you heard that right. That's more than half. That's about 60% of the annual money DOD gets going to contractors. And some of the things they're going to talk about in that report, I've seen a preliminary look, are really awful. You're talking about things like that $400,000 example of the Ford class carrier toilet system, but you're talking about them in a way that they're not so glaring as that. They're not so laughable as that. They permeate the system, though. The fraud comes from lying. Outright lying about prices, about eventual profits. It comes from lying about the systems that are being made. And when I say systems, I do mean plural because nothing comes out today, certainly not a Ford-class aircraft carrier, without being composed of just millions of systems, each of which has a potential for fraud in it. And there is no way of looking at those systems. GAO is going to take the Army on, my Army. It's going to take it on because it gave the services about a year ago a week to put together a board that would look at fraud. And the Army, now a year later, has not even appointed a member to that board.
Wow.
So this is deep stuff.
Well, so let me turn back to Lindsey Kashkarian. I still want to get a handle on how what Colonel Wilkerson is saying, what you heard Representative Pocan say, that the Department of Defense has not been able to put forward an audit, a clean audit of itself, what, ever? Whereas other departments, I'm thinking of HHS, have done something, have actually presented audits of themselves for, what, years now. What is going on with the DOD?
Well, Magna, a big part of it does have to do with how the DOD budget is so tremendous and it's so complicated, and Colonel Wilkerson can certainly speak a lot more to that. But it took more than 20 years for the Department of Defense to even complete an audit, years after other departments had completed and passed audits. And then just a couple of years ago, the Department of Defense was very proud of itself for completing its first audit, but it failed the audit. And it's failed every audit it's completed since then.
What does failure mean in this case?
Meaning they went through the process, which is what they couldn't even do for 20 years. They couldn't even go through the process. And then a couple of years ago, they finally went through the audit process, but they weren't able to say that they knew where all the money was going. And so that's failing the audit. Well, is just when they don't even.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I think the examples are so jaw dropping. I'm just going to give a couple more. I mean, I did pick on the Ford class carrier's toilets earlier, but to Colonel Wilkerson's point, I've seen that, for example, a senior aide to Senator Bernie Sanders told NPR that right now the Pentagon can't even say where all of its buildings are located in the United States.
They don't have accurate counts of their buildings. They don't have accurate counts of their inventories. They don't have accurate counts of where their dollars are going. There have been proposals in Congress that the Pentagon shouldn't be allowed to get any more increases, or in some cases, you know, should even get a ding, should even lose money for every year that they continue to fail to pass an audit. But those haven't gone anywhere. There haven't been enough members of Congress who've been willing to support those efforts.
Okay, so Colonel Wilkerson, help us understand how this is continuing on. Because the same Department of Defense that can that can launch a logistically complex, strategically sophisticated military action anywhere on planet Earth is also saying that it can't even figure out who its own contractors are or where its buildings are in the United States. I feel like just the excuse that I've heard is that the Pentagon is too big, but that's actually even that's an insult to the intelligent men and women who work in that very building and are extremely capable of executing whatever mission they're given. I don't get it.
Precisely. There are a lot of people in the Pentagon, a lot of people in the military at large, who really would like to get a handle on this and who really are ashamed that they do so poor a job at auditing themselves and at spending their money. But they're in the minority. When you look at the leadership, when you look at the three and the four stars, they enjoy this process in the sense that no one can ever hold them indictable. No one can ever point at a particular flag officer, rarely anyway, and say, you were neglectful. You were negligent. You should not have let this happen. There were plenty of flags involved with the F-35 program whom you could have done that with at any time you wanted to. And I dare the military to tell me that they couldn't have. They did not want to, because it would have, as the Kabul evacuation did recently and the drone strike in that evacuation did recently, embarrassed them to no end. Mm. And they might have lost some of their prerogatives and their power. So there's where your problem is. They don't want to do it. They like the slush. They like the pollution.
Well, and so do members of Congress, though, right? Because, you know, I mentioned earlier that President Biden put forth a $715 billion proposal for 2022. It's Congress, Republicans and Democrats, who want to increase it by $25 billion. But I'm looking at defense analysts outside of the Pentagon who are saying the thing that's missing, the glaring thing that's missing, is any strategic justification for that increase.
Absolutely. And you're also looking at something like 1.2 to 1.5 trillion, yes, trillion, over the next 10 years to be spent on the so-called modernization, securitization, and securitization of our nuclear weapons, most of which, if not all of which, we need like we need two more holes in our head. This is stupid to go on building these nuclear weapons and to do what we're doing. And yet we're going to spend all that money in addition to what we're talking about with regard to the $750 billion for the Defense Department every year on nuclear weapons, the most dangerous weapons on the face of the earth. It's insanity, but it's very lucrative. It's very lucrative for political action committees, and it's very lucrative for the hometown base where the contracts are rendered, although they would be angry, too, if they knew how much they lose as the contractors skim off the top of their contracts. But it is very lucrative. That's what Afghanistan was, Meghna. It was a cash cow for 20 years.
Mm. Lindsay Koshgarian, the sunlight, right, being the best disinfectant here. You mentioned some current efforts in Congress to at least start getting clean audits, a transparency in terms of how money, taxpayer dollars, are being spent through the Pentagon. There's the Audit the Pentagon Act of 2021, which would require any part of the DOD that fails to present a clean audit to forfeit 1% of its budget back to the Treasury. I mean, I don't know what the prospect of this Audit the Pentagon Act of 2021 is, but what do you think its prospects are? And is that the right kind of step forward that needs to be taken?
Well, Meghna, we've been seeing this act for years now, and it has yet to pass. So I think the thing that Colonel Wilkerson pointed to, the issues of jobs and members of Congress being driven by, you know, sometimes just a handful of jobs in their district and unwilling to cut spending, or in many cases, even willing to spend more and buy things the Pentagon didn't even ask for. Right now, you just saw the House Armed Services Committee vote to add $25 billion on top of the Biden budget for the Pentagon. And it was based on 200 requests from members of the House Armed Services Committee for essentially projects in their own districts. So it's a huge problem. And there's a huge conflict of interest that members of Congress have when it comes to this. But I do think we need to build support for things like the audit, the Pentagon Act. We can also just build support by increasing pressure on the Pentagon, budget pressure in general. And that $25 billion increase was actually opposed by the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Representative Adam Smith, on the grounds that the Pentagon doesn't need more money thrown at it so that it can avoid making tough decisions and avoid understanding where its own money goes. As long as they can get an increase anytime they ask for it, there's no motivation for them to pass an audit or to understand where their money is actually going.
Okay, but what we have, though is a DoD budget that maybe is growing less aggressively than it has in the past, but it's still, the original proposal is still over $715 billion, which, again, leads us to this question about why is the Pentagon, why is even the administration or any member of Congress not putting forth a compelling argument for why avoiding cuts is a strategic necessity? So, Colonel Wilkerson, I'm going to want to talk to you and Lindsay Kashgarian a lot about that when we come back. We're going to take a look at what are the future, current and future threats to the United States, and how should the money to protect the nation against those threats be best spent? We'll be back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Just a quick preview to tomorrow's program. We're going to be talking with former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb. He's got a new book looking back at the United States' response to the COVID-19 pandemic, and he is very critical of that response, saying the country wasn't prepared then, and it's not prepared now, 18 months later, for the next pandemic, which will inevitably come. So we want to hear from you. How are things going where you live in your community? What has the local response been like on the ground where you are? And what's your question for the former FDA commissioner? Call us at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683 for tomorrow's show. Today, we are taking a look at the Pentagon's budget and asking whether or not it's too big. And why? It's more than $700 billion annually now. And over the next 10 years, that's more than $7 trillion that Congress is seemingly willing to appropriate with little to no discussion at all. Whereas right now, at the same time, there is vigorous debate over spending $3.5 trillion over the next 10 years for anti-poverty, healthcare, and climate programs in this country. So we're trying to understand the difference between the two. And more importantly, what should the Pentagon's budget be in order to provide an adequate national defense for 21st century problems? I'm joined today by Lindsay Kashgarian. She's program director of the National Priorities Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. And retired Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson joins us as well. He's a senior fellow at the Eisenhower Media Network. And Colonel Wilkerson and Lindsay Kashgarian, I want to just hear a couple of minutes more of our conversation we had with Representative Mark Pocan of Wisconsin, because he also talked to us, I mean, speaking of current and future threats, he talked to us about a bill that he has pending that would reallocate 1% of the DOD's budget for COVAX effort. That's international coronavirus vaccination efforts. And so we asked him why he wanted to pull that money specifically from the defense budget.
Well, because I think in defense of the nation is getting rid of COVID. Dr. Jha, who's been one of the doctors that's been on a lot of TV episodes talking about COVID, he was talking to members of Congress once, and he referred to COVID as a national security threat. And it is a national security threat. Therefore, the dollars that go to the Pentagon should address our security, not just private defense contractors, but we should be using defense dollars, I think, for things like pandemics, for addressing climate change that's a threat to this country, for addressing cybersecurity that's a threat to this country. And you can have a broader definition than just bombs and bombers. And I think that is really what many of us in Congress and people in outside organizations would like to see us do. Let's broaden that definition of defense so that we can redirect more dollars from private contractors and bombs and put it towards things that also defend the American people, but maybe in an even more effective way.
So you're asking for a more, I'd say, modern approach to thinking about what constitutes national security. And, you know, what's really interesting is the Pentagon itself for many years has been issuing reports about, like, what are the greatest national security threats? And these other things like climate change have come up from the Pentagon itself. But do you think that, you know, you said many members of Congress feel the same way? I mean, is this a growing movement in Congress to have a different view of what we should be tagging security dollars for?
Absolutely. In fact, working with a lot of the groups that address peace and justice issues, who address issues like global vaccinations, more and more people are seeing this as something that would be the definition to move towards. And I've had this conversation, quite honestly, with people in the Biden administration. I feel very passionately that it is a modern definition of defense that we need to have. It is not just more F-35s and Ford-class aircraft carriers and other things like that that we spend money on with defense contractors that have little to no accountability for taxpayers anyway. And pandemics, to me, that's the biggest no-brainer. We have to do more to make sure that people are vaccinated to stop the variants. And if you look at what the CDC budget is alone, with Joe Biden proposed, the 1.7% increase that he proposed for defense is 150% of the entire CDC budget. Just that little increase in defense spending dwarfs what we spend in totality on the Center for Disease Control. And I think that's part of what we think needs a modern redefinition.
Representative Mark Pocan, Democrat of Wisconsin. Colonel Wilkerson, what do you think the future is in terms of where the United States military is going to have to focus its effort? And do you see any sign that the DOD's budget is positioned to meet that future?
No to the last part of your question. And I agree with Congressman Pocan once again that we have not defined the threats properly, and therefore we don't have the proper strategy for meeting them and the proper way of spending our money to fund that strategy. And at the top of the list, of course, are the two that he mentioned. Now, he didn't mention nuclear weapons, but I'll mention them. Climate crisis and nuclear weapons are the two potentially existential threats that we face, and we're not addressing either properly. We have one ghastly threat, I call it, which we confront, and that's pandemics. We've had more people die in this country from COVID-19 than we had die in all our wars in the 20th and 21st centuries. And then we have other things. We have the cyber business, what I call systems warfare. We have economic aggrandizement that the Belt and Road Initiative of China, for example, could represent. We don't know yet, but it could be that. And then we have terrorists with a global capability. All the money we're spending, with very little exception these days, is on legacy systems. Systems like the Ford-class aircraft carrier, systems like the F-35, no matter how modern it is supposed to be. We're spending on threats of the past, and we're neglecting spending on threats that either face us right now, this moment, or are looming in the future.
Well, Lindsay Koshgarian, let me turn back to you here, because it seems as if there's consensus in Congress around what another great potential future threat might be, and that is China. Right. There's a kind of big anti-China push in terms of thinking about what the DOD is going to need to focus on in the coming years. Now, to me, that sounds like a continuation of sort of a great powers model of national defense there. What do you think?
That's right, Meghna. And members of Congress and folks in the leadership at the Pentagon and in the administration are openly talking about great powers competition with China. And it's essentially a rehash of the 20th century Cold War, but with a new antagonist for the United States. And it, they're using it to justify ongoing increases in the Pentagon budget. And just bringing it back to where we are at this moment, we've just pulled our last troop out of Afghanistan. We've just, you know, ended that 20-year war. We still have war going on in Iraq. This should be a moment for the U.S. to look at its spending on the Department of Defense and say, where do we still need spending for security? And what can we save and move on now that we're leaving this war in Afghanistan? Instead, you have members of Congress and others talking about how we're going to shift this money into a competition with China. But China is not a military problem for the United States. China, you know, there are economic problems. China has human rights problems that we need to address. But it shouldn't be, none of this is something that we should address through military means. And it's really just, honestly, it's an excuse to keep the military budget as high as it's been and to continue that spending and continue the funneling of money to contractors and weapon systems that we don't need anymore and all of that.
Colonel Wilkerson, let me ask you, let me put it this way. Do you think the current size of the Pentagon's budget, forget the contractors, because we know it's good for them, right? You know, the big five contractors you were talking about pulling in 40% of that $700 billion. But is the current size of the military budget good for the military itself, for the men and women of the United States military? And is it good for the nation that they are tasked with defending?
It is not. It is decidedly not. I think it's polluting. That's the term I like to use. It pollutes brain power. It pollutes imagination. It pollutes creativity. George Marshall, as he was confronting the paucity of resources at his beck and call in the late 30s, once he'd taken over and was looking at the looming war, participating in the war in Europe and a looming war with Japan, had such a situation on his hands. We've got that situation on our hands again, but for the very reverse reason. There's too much, and it's going in the wrong direction. And there are no imaginative, creative leaders in the Pentagon or in the military in general because of that. The worst thing you can do to a military instrument in time of peace is give it too much, and give it so much in this case that you pollute it, you corrupt it, you make it a self-licking ice cream cone is the expression we used to use in the Pentagon. And that's exactly what we've done.
Well, you know what the pushback line to it is, because you hear it all the time. And here's a, here's an example. This is Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, Republican, who says it's just not enough for the defense budget to be simply adequate. And she said, here's what she said back in June.
The last thing we need to be doing is cutting this budget. We should be proud of those who fought for this country, but we certainly should be supporting those who fought for this country. And, you know, we all know the cost of freedom.
$700 billion, Colonel, that's the cost of freedom.
It is not the cost of freedom, and any of my veterans on either of my campuses will tell you that. They will tell you that they know starkly and horribly now that they didn't go to Iraq and kill people there, or Afghanistan and kill people there, or Libya, or any place else we've been of late for freedom, democracy, human rights, security of the American continent. No, no. They went there for cash cow contractors. They know that. That's one reason the suicide rate is so high in the armed services. Hmm.
Okay, so we've got about 5 minutes left here. Let's get down to what can be done about this. Lindsay Koshgarian, what do you think a right-sized, if I can put it that way, budget would be for the DOD that could actually accomplish all the things that we're talking about here, like adequately fund the men and women who serve the United States military, position the Pentagon to really attack those 21st century problems head on, you know, to fulfill its overall mission in defending the country? What size of budget do you think it would be?
Well, Meghna, there are proposals from people who align on both sides of the aisle politically outside of Congress to cut anywhere from $100 billion to $200 billion to $350 billion every year from the Pentagon budget. And all of those proposals deserve a close and careful look by members of Congress. But right this week, members of Congress will be voting most likely on an amendment to cut the Pentagon budget by 10%. That would take the budget back to where it was under President Obama. So it's far from a radical proposal. And this is something that's being co-sponsored by Representatives Mark Pocan and Barbara Lee. And that is a test to see whether members of Congress are willing to think about the Pentagon budget in terms of what we actually need, think about whether we should just continue shoveling money toward contractors. And this is a measure that deserves support across the board. It is a completely moderate proposal. And if the Pentagon can't see its way to saving 10%, then we shouldn't trust it with any of the money that we give it.
So 10%, $70 billion.
About $70 billion.
Okay,
right.
for 2022. And look, Representative Pocan presented a very optimistic point, an optimistic view of what might happen in the coming days, weeks, and months. He has to, right? Because he's still trying to sell this idea to his fellow members of Congress. Do you share his optimism, Lindsay?
I do share his optimism that we are moving in the right direction on this. There are increasingly members of Congress who understand what's at stake, understand that it's not good for the Pentagon to keep throwing money at it like this. It's essentially creating corruption, and understand that we desperately need to get back to looking at things like the pandemic and climate change and other problems that Representative Pocan talked about.
But those same members of Congress, as you pointed out, are, you know, putting forth proposals to increase the DOD's budget based on requests made by contractors from their own districts. I guess I don't share the optimism.
Well, I don't share short-term optimism. This is not something that we're likely to win this year, but things are moving in the right direction. There are more Representative Pocans in Congress than there were a few years ago. There are more Representative Barbara Lees and others who have supported Pentagon cuts. So we need to keep building those voices up in Congress. We need to, you know, put our voices behind them so that they can have more success. And we need to make clear that we know a key fact here is that representatives support Pentagon budgets and increase Pentagon spending because of job creation. But dollar for dollar, putting money into the Pentagon is one of the worst job creators there is in government. If you put that same money into healthcare or infrastructure or clean energy or a number of other things, you can actually create more good jobs with that money. And so we need to make members of Congress aware of that, and we need to make sure that they know we know that that's the case.
Okay, so Colonel Wilkerson, Lindsay just pointed out there's a potential 10% cut on the table that members of Congress have to vote on. To be clear, she's done some excellent work looking deep into the Pentagon's budget, and her group has put together a list of cuts that, again, could potentially add up to $350 billion on the 50% side. Again, this is just an analysis. I don't think there's any serious proposal in Congress right now. But do you share or feel, Colonel, any kind of optimism that now that Afghanistan is quote unquote over, that this may be a turning point in how the people who sign the checks in Congress see what the Pentagon's budget should be?
I wish I did. I wish I shared Lindsay's optimism, and I applaud her for having it at all. And I do see that there is some positive movement, but I don't think it's going to be positive enough. I've been involved in studies that show clearly, and I'm a military professional, clearly that we could cut $100 billion a year or $1 trillion over a decade. But I don't see it happening. Here's what I see happening. I see one of these crises, possibly the climate crisis, becoming so profound that more people die in New York basements, more people die in Louisiana, more people are needed to fight fires, more people are needed to fight floods. And this crisis deepens to the point where the military is brought in. Mm. And then and only then, will we change, reshape, and make it pertinent to our future?
Retired Colonel Larry Wilkerson, thank you as always for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Lindsay Koshgarian, Program Director at the National Priorities Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.